Hello and welcome to Your Best Self, a podcast about careers. I'm your host, Faye Rowlands, lawyer and journalist, and together in this podcast, we'll hear from inspirational people spanning the worlds of business, politics, law, media, science, art, and more, sharing what they love most about their jobs, how they handle setbacks, and offer listeners their tips to career success. I hope this podcast informs and inspires you to think big and encourages you to go after the dream job you want. Well, you might be surprised to learn that nearly half of Irish workers plan to change jobs within the next year. That's according to a poll carried out by Hayes Recruitment Firm here in Dublin. But with working from home here to stay, changing organisation can be a daunting prospect. My guest this week is well placed to offer advice on how to deal with these issues. Ross Toynbee is a leading career coach in the UK. She spent the past 18 years helping her clients build fulfilling careers, whether that's going for a promotion, joining a new organisation, or executing a complete career change. In this episode, she tells me how her own career has evolved over the years and shares her tips on how to stay motivated at work during lockdown. I hope you enjoy the episode. So, Ross, for those of our listeners who might not be so familiar with the role of a career coach, I was wondering if you could maybe just describe what the role entails and what attracted you to the role of a career coach.
Great question. So a career coach is somebody who helps you think through what you need from your career, clarify your options, and then plan to make that happen. So, for example, if you were looking to achieve a promotion, we might do some exploration about what the role is going to entail, your strengths and gaps, plan how to close them, and to do some active work on skill building so that you've got the necessary skills to demonstrate in your interview so that you can land the job. Or if you were unhappy in your career and you didn't know at what level that was happening, you know, is it me? Is it the job? Is it my company? Is I'm just bored doing this too long? You know, at what level is that occurring? We would have an in-depth exploration using different exercises to get really clear about who you were at this age and stage of your career, and therefore identify where the changes need to happen so that you're focusing on the right next move in your job search. And in that way, what you're doing is you're being proactive about designing your career according to what you want to develop and build, as opposed to what your manager or your organization might have in mind for you, which might be different to what would naturally align with your strengths or your interests. So that's in a nutshell what career coaching is. How did I get into it? A little bit by accident, although you might not believe there's any such thing as accidents. I was made redundant from my job as a broadcast journalist at Scottish Television back in 2002 when coaching was very new. And my yoga teacher said, look, why don't you try coaching? And I said, I don't need coaching. I'm really good at finding jobs, which I am, by the way. This is partly why I'm specialising in career coaching. But I worked with my first coach, Jonathan, for 3 months. And it was transformational for me. And one of the side benefits to that is that my next role, I achieved a £10,000 uplift in my salary, like pretty much overnight, within 3 months. So the money that I spent on the coaching was probably one of the best financial returns on investment I ever had. And it's funny because we think with something like our career that maybe friends and family can support us, but actually they're the worst people because they're blinkered, it's not confidential, necessarily a safe setting. You know, your spouse might have a particular agenda for you, might not want to support you as you change career. They're not going to say that to your face, but they might sabotage your best efforts to do that. Or, you know, they do love you and they mean good things for you, but they're ignorant to properly support you. So by working with a trained professional, you're able to achieve your outcome faster better. And yes, you might get a financial uplift. Not always. It will depend on what the career goals are. But there's many, many benefits from working with somebody in a trained confidential setting.
And Ross, you've had a really interesting career yourself. I know you've mentioned there that you had worked as a broadcast journalist in Scotland. I know that you also had professionally trained and qualified as a solicitor. How have those experiences influenced your current role as a career coach?
So you're right. I originally started out as a commercial property solicitor in Glasgow, and I did a traineeship for 2 years. And it was a tough old traineeship. It was a very difficult environment in which to learn and to work. I think one of the things that really moves me is helping people to have a more human experience in the workplace. You know, I was bullied quite mercilessly. I would come home crying. I just lost my confidence and really unsure how to navigate that situation. My own mum was a hairdresser and had her own business and hadn't worked in corporate life. And I really felt ill-equipped to be able to stand up for myself, to know what to say without being rejected. So I was like a little a timorous beastie, as they would say in Scotland. I was shy, I was quiet, but I didn't know how to navigate the situation. And also, I think it wasn't a particularly good fit for me. I went into law because it was expected by my parents. I was bright. I got an unconditional offer to Edinburgh University, which was the best place to do law. I came out with a 2-2. Like, you know, all external, you know, appearances would be that I should have a fabulous career in law. But I felt I didn't have any creativity in the role. As I said, I really wasn't supported or managed properly as well. I think a combination of these things led me to explore, well, what else could I do? And at the time, I didn't have a career coach. But what I did do was I took on a little article freelance writing course at my local university just for fun, just to get a creative outlet. Not with any expectation I would do anything with it, but I found I was able to start selling my articles and I quite enjoyed it. And so that planted the seed of, well, what else could I do with this? And at the end of my traineeship, I took a year out to travel, as many people do. I did the New Zealand and Australia thing, got the work visa, and just gave myself the space and time to think and had lots of conversations and lots of reflections. And the long and short of it is I came back to the UK very clear that what I was going to do was to move into radio journalism. And so I spent a year networking, building up connections, hearing from those in the business about the best way to do that. And the advice I got was do a postgraduate diploma at Cardiff University. It's the most employable qualification to get. And that's exactly what I did. And by the time I finished that, I had done a work placement at the BBC as well for my Easter break. By the time I finished all that, within 6 weeks, I walked into my first freelance job in BBC Scotland on the Drive Time programme, which is the lunchtime and tea time programme, as a producer. And you know, I was very lucky, but I had also kind of worked to earn that luck as well. I had a number of connections that I'd built over that initial year and throughout the year that I was studying, so that by the time I came out, all I had to do was call in all those connections and say I was looking for my first opportunity. So that's why that came up. It wasn't complete luck, but that's how I got started in broadcasting and was very happy in that career. I should say it absolutely ticked all the boxes for me in terms of creativity and variety, the people side of it, no 2 days the same, very exciting career to be in. And when I hired my first coach, I wasn't intending on leaving it. But in working with my first coach, he planted the seed of, Ross, you're one of my best coaching clients. Have you thought about coaching as a career? And I said to him, well, no, not really, quite happy doing what I'm doing. But nonetheless, I took a job in BBC Training and Development in London, and an opportunity came 5 weeks into the job to join the BBC's internal leadership and management coaching service. And I was right time, right place. I grabbed the opportunity with both hands. And from there, things slowly developed and that became my path. So I think it's interesting how life throws these things at us. And when I'm working with clients who've been made redundant, and by golly, how many people have been made redundant or furloughed throughout the pandemic, and they are in shock and in denial and angry and all of those things. You have to go through those emotions when this happens. And I'm living proof that it's the best thing that ever happened to me, because there's no way that I would have established a coaching business and still have it 18 years later if I hadn't have been let go by my head of news all those years ago.
Wow. I mean, listening to your story there, Russ, one thing that really strikes me is when you said about something being a good fit. And it's sort of clear from talking to you that obviously both your previous career as a broadcaster and your current career, it appears to be a really good fit. I'm conscious that a lot of our listeners are maybe starting out on their career journey, and they're maybe considering what field of study they're going to go down, what career path they're going to go down, or maybe they're reevaluating where they're currently at and looking at seeing how they can harness what skills they have and maybe pivot and use them differently. How do you go about identifying a career that would be a good fit? What are some of the variables or qualities that people should be considering when deciding on, you know, a career path that would be a good fit for them?
I think this is a difficult question to answer because much depends on the age and stage you're at. Now, my careers advice was awful at school, and it was pretty awful at university, if I'm truly honest as well. But I think part of the reason why it is difficult to be a careers advisor at school or university is because you don't yet have work experience. So my view is that when it comes to choosing options at university or college or, you know, whatever, you know, whatever you're starting with, you know, go with what you're interested in, but also keep one eye on what's employable as well. You know, there's no point doing a course and spending lots of money on it if on speaking to the tutors and the alumni who have done that course, they didn't have a job at the end of it. And the price of education is so much now that it has to lead to something else. Now, that's not to say that you can't do, you know, PPE or English literature or media studies for that matter. I think, you know, the arts are less employable, but know that if you have that kind of background, that the civil service will take people with a politics background. Do think ahead to second and third consequences later on down the line. Don't just choose something purely based on interest. So that's the first thing. Notice what your interests are, but also ask some tough questions with the college or the university about what do your students go on to do. So that's the first thing. Secondly, I would say just get started somewhere. And, you know, lots of my clients come to me and say, well, I just fell into retail, or I fell into construction, or, you know, I fell into communications because it was 2008 and there wasn't much going. And, I, you know, it was the first job offered to me or whatever. And that's okay. So just get any job. You know, if you really don't know what to do, just get a job and notice what you enjoy about it. And if you enjoy it, keep doing more of that thing. Ask for feedback about what others see as being your strengths and your weaknesses. And go in with a growth mindset as well. Of course, anything you start out with, you're going to be rubbish at by definition. You're a beginner. So don't put unrealistic expectations on yourself about, I should know this job, you know, 5 weeks into the job. It can take 5, 6, 9 months to learn a job, and you're going to mess up. But what I learned and what I didn't know as a trainee solicitor is that we can learn from our mistakes without beating ourselves up. If we can see every failure as just, oh, that's interesting, I got some data that didn't quite work the way I expected it to. What can I learn from this? Can I reach out to somebody who can give me some useful guidance on what I need to do differently and follow that? Then you'll start to grow yourself personally and professionally. And no job is perfect. There will always be aspects of a job you can't stand. I don't really like doing my accounts, for example, and I don't particularly like writing blogs. I'm much more of a speaker or a listener than I am a writer. So, be realistic about what a job can give you, but at the same time, don't stay any longer in a job you're thoroughly miserable with. And if you are in a situation where you can't progress where you are, where the finances of the organization are in peril, please don't just sit there and wait until you're let go, because that's the time when you're going to be most vulnerable finding a new opportunity. And this really is where reaching out to a coach and having a tailored conversation with them over a few sessions can really make the difference, because I've got 18 years' experience doing this, so I can see their blind spots. I can share that with them. I can, bring in suggestions and options. Have you thought about this? Did you know about that? Did you know there was this resource and that website? And then people suddenly perk up and go, I didn't know that. And that's really useful. And thank you for that, because now I can see that there's possibilities and there's options.
And Ross, do you believe in the idea of having a 5-year career plan or a 10-year career plan? Is that a helpful idea, or is that more of a hindrance?
Kate Adie never had a career plan. Now, for your listeners who don't know who Kate Adie is, she was the first ever female war correspondent for the BBC. And in her autobiography, she said, I never had a career plan, but what I did do was I looked for opportunities that were interesting. And I seized any opportunity that came along that was interesting. So she used one of her values as her criteria for deciding whether to take on a new opportunity. And she was just interested in developing her skills and her knowledge and her experience. She just really had that growth mindset, and she'd throw herself into things and then she'd discover more of what she could do in everything that she did. So, do you have to have a career plan? No, you don't. But I think there's a certain point where, towards the end of your 20s and certainly your early 30s, if you have jumped around a lot, your CV starts to look as if you can't stick with anything. And so when you're asked an interview, where do you see yourself going in 5 years' time? If you don't have some sort of reasonable answer to that, you're not showing the commitment to the role in the organization for you to progress your career in that organization. What I think is, some people have a really strong idea of where they want to be. They watched, I don't know, Operation Ouch or its equivalent back in the day. They knew they wanted to be a doctor. They knew what they needed to do to be a doctor. They knew, they researched how long it took to be, I don't know, a pediatrician or whatever, and they planned out their career. And that's fantastic. There may well be a well-worn path where you can plan out a career, and it can be fairly linear. But the vast majority of people are not in career paths that are linear any longer, and can never be, because pandemics, economic cycles, digital transformation, constant and never-ending change are disrupting these old career paths. And so, if what I think is more useful to have is to have a sense of purpose. What's the contribution I want to make? What are my values? How will I know whether to take an opportunity or not? And just another example of that would be Richard Branson. So Richard Branson's number one value is fun. He's on the board of 199 organisations, and he takes on projects according to whether they're fun or not. Now, for me, trains are not fun, but trains are fun for him. So yeah, it's about understanding yourself, your purpose, your values, and that's not necessarily something that just comes by reflecting on them by yourself. That's where actually talking that out with somebody else can be really, really helpful, because again, they might see things that you're not seeing.
And Ross, I'm conscious that this is a very difficult time at the moment for a lot of people. Working from home is starting to wear thin. The novelty is sort of wearing off. As we record this now, it's during the third lockdown. Have you any advice for people on how they can try and maintain a sense of motivation when they're working from home, when they're feeling so disconnected from all of their colleagues? Those external stimuli are no longer there. Are there any sort of tips or advice that you could offer for people in trying to maintain a sense of connection with their co-workers and try to maintain a sense of motivation for their work?
Yeah. I think one of the things that many organisations have realised is the value of mental health and good mental health in particular. So I've seen, without exception, HR departments actually, reaching out and saying, "Look, you need to have bookends in your day. Don't just log in at 8 o'clock because that's when you'd start your commute. Log in at your normal time." Log off at your normal time, the time you'd be using for a commute, use that to read a book, to go for a walk, if the weather's too bad, just to stare outside or, cook or to do something else so that you're bookending the day and that work happens, start to end on a particular time, and that you take a break in the middle of the day and that organizations allow you to say, "Look, I'm on such and such a time, but I'm taking the dog for a walk at this time, or I'm doing my exercise between 1 and 2 every day." So that's the first thing in terms of just taking self-care. And I think most people are starting to realize that if they don't take care of that, then everything just goes south, and it is hard because, the kitchen is close to hand and it's easy to just eat chocolate when we're feeling bored and frustrated, and we have to just be mindful of that and make sure that we're getting out and exercise. The key thing, of course, is conversations with people. Now, I do almost all my work on Zoom or Teams, and I get Zoom fatigue. So sometimes I will have conversations with family and friends by phone. Sometimes I will agree with my clients to have a conversation by phone. But it is about being very conscious about reaching out. And I think the group that are struggling the most right now, and I've got several clients who've been in this situation over the last few months, are those starting a brand new job without being in the office. Because whereas normally you'd see where everybody sits, you can in your head get a sense of who's who, which departments are they in, how does everybody interact. There's opportunities maybe in a canteen or in the lift or in the corridors or by the water cooler to just have chit chat. All of that has gone. And so we need to be more intentional. So one of the things I get my new starters doing is asking their boss on the first week, who are the key relationships? What are their names? Which departments are they? And actually scheduling conversations with all of them to just get to know them. What do you do? How do you do it? How do you interact with my department? What we're doing well, what could we be doing better? Just and a little bit about their lives outside of work and what they did before that job, and just get to connect with them personally. But also the other thing is for line managers to do a lot more to have socials. I think we're probably all quizzed out now, but be social secretary. If you've got a good idea for something that can maybe be done on Zoom, where you can connect with your work colleagues, but not talking about work at all, then do it, because we all need that time to chat about the Netflix series we've been watching, or whether we're going to do Joe Wicks this time or whatever else it is. We just need that downtime to talk.
I'd like to move on and talk to you, if I may, about mentoring. Because I think this is something of interest, certainly to a lot of younger people in the workforce. Firstly, what is mentoring and how is it important in the workplace?
Okay, so mentoring is where you find somebody who's usually more senior than you, maybe has walked the career ladder that you are interested in, or at least are doing the job that you aspire to move towards. And they have some perspective on the steps to take to get there. They maybe have some skills that you admire and would like to replicate. They're particularly good presenters, or they're particularly good people, or there's something about their leadership that you respect and admire. They could be somebody who has a very good overview of your organization, different departments, well connected inside and outside of the organization, maybe a thought leader even in your sector. You want a mentor because they can give you the strategic overview. They've walked where you have. They can give you advice and guidance, and they may well know some of the people that you know. Why is it important? Well, it's particularly important for women and minorities if you want to get into positions of leadership, because these are the people who can sponsor you. They can open doors. They might hear about job opportunities or secondment opportunities that you wouldn't otherwise. So it helps to broaden your network. It helps to give you credibility and visibility. And in my view, everyone should have a mentor and actually have several mentors over the course of your career.
And with a professional mentoring relationship, is that something that sort of arises organically, or is it something that, you know, you should be looking to identify a mentor in your chosen career field or within your organization? Is that something you should be looking to proactively do?
Yes. I think you need to sort of sit down and think, okay, what am I looking for in my mentor? What are the qualities or skills or level of experience that I want my mentor to have? This is particularly important, by the way, if you're looking to move to another department and you have no prior existing relationship. You might not know who the names of these people are. You might need to look them up on LinkedIn, or you might need to ask your own network in order to find out who they are. So, you know, thinking about qualities, getting a name and reaching out to them directly, email, text, even a phone call, and just sharing something of, look, this is what I'm currently doing. I'm really interested in, let's say, for example, procurement, but I need to understand more about what the job entails. And I can see that as the senior director of the procurement department, you've obviously got a lot of experience in this area. I wonder if we could meet for a coffee, or these days a virtual coffee, and just have 20 minutes of your time to learn more about how you got into it and any advice you might have for me.
And Ross, if any of our listeners would like to get in contact with you, perhaps organise one-on-one coaching, how can they go about that?
The best way to do that is to go to my website, which is www.thecareercoach.co.uk, thecareercoach.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Ross. Lovely to speak with you this morning.
Thank you, Faye.
Thanks for listening to Your Best Self. If you enjoyed this podcast, please hit the subscribe button or leave me a review.